Hello and welcome to Civil Discourse. I'm Anthony Donatelli. I'm going to be your co-host for this episode. I am joined by my lovely bride, Taylor Donatelli.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. So you have found our first episode of Civil Discourse. And so we're going to kind of explain what you can expect to hear and expect from this podcast. So I kind of had this idea based on the national narrative right now, where pretty much nothing is talked about without going to extremes, right? So it's typically pretty hateful and attacking and just horrible to listen to the point that you just want to tune out and not listen.
We can't have a conversation about anything.
Right. People are scared to have conversations. And so the whole point and the whole thought behind Civil Discourse is that we would put people at this table to discuss whatever we want to. I mean, it could be something that's in the national news. It could be something that's affecting only locally. Or it could be really about nothing. But the whole premise is that we talk about whatever we are talking about without attacking a person. You know, if you want to have a debate about ideas and philosophies, then we can certainly do that in a civil manner. So that's what we're all about. And we hope you can come on this journey with us. So just so you get to know me and kind of where I come from and where my views are, I am a retired military officer. I spent just shy of 22 years in the United States Army. 8.5 of those were as an infantryman, an enlisted infantryman. The remainder were as a warrant officer in the United States Army, and I was a pilot. And I have a high school education with 3 years of college that I did not finish, which is a stark contrast to Taylor, who will introduce herself and kind of talk about where she comes from.
Thank you. So I was raised in the Midwest, spent most of my adult life in college. I actually started college the day after I graduated high school. I have 2 bachelor's degrees, a master's degree, and I don't use any of them in my current profession. I loved everything I studied, and I don't regret going to college. But when we moved out here, the job market didn't offer a whole lot. It's a city that's based a lot in the service industry. There's a lot of hotels here, restaurants, bars, and everything. So
healthcare.
And none of my degrees are in healthcare. So I am in the service industry. I spent a lot of my life in this industry. It's actually how I paid for all of my school. I didn't take out any student loans. I was fortunate enough to be able to pay cash for the entirety of my education. So I work as a bartender downtown here in Spokane. I'm married to Anthony. We have 3 awesome little fur babies, and we live up in a nice little secluded area where we get to preside over the realm.
We do. Can we consider ourselves sitting on Iron Thrones?
Yes, we can.
I would like that.
Except ours are more cushioned.
Hold on, who actually sits on the Iron Throne? Is it you or me?
Well, there's, for anyone that watches the show, there are 2 Iron Thrones, as we saw in this last season. So we can have 2.
Okay, cool. We have two Iron Thrones. So talk to me a little about, you had mentioned that you've got all of this education and you don't use it, which is a stark contrast to me, who has limited, you know, the only formal completed education is a high school degree, and I use it every day.
So we were, but before we moved out here, we both were from the Midwest, and we were basically in a race for our dream jobs. Mine would have put us in DC. Yours brought us here. You had actually had 3 offers within like a 2-week span, but this had been what your ultimate dream job was. So that's what brought us here. For me, though, there wasn't a whole lot in the sector that I was looking to get into, which would be analyst work for the government. So I ended up finding an amazing job. I'm not complaining by any stretch. I'm very, very happy with what I've got and what I do. I've never woken up a single day and said, oh, shit, I have to go to work. I actually start smiling on my ride to work. Rude. I start smiling on my way to work because I'm so happy to be there. I work for 2 amazing women. I love my coworkers. I love my customers. It's very much a regulars kind of place. You're a noisy man over there today.
I know. I got notifications going off like crazy.
Well, aren't you important?
Well, you know, today is the 12th of February, 2019. And in case you don't remember that when you're listening to this podcast and you happen to be local, it's Snowmageddon here. So I have a bunch of
alerts. It's also Abraham Lincoln's birthday.
I
random info.
Yeah, she is the keeper of completely worthless facts. But I have a lot of alerts going off letting me know that, hey.
More snow's coming.
And it just told us that we are to report delayed tomorrow for work.
Awesome. Well, I guess it's a good thing you got a new blade for the snowplow today.
I absolutely did. We got hammered with snow last night. So, I'm sorry. My notifications rudely interrupted you with your kind of talking about how you got to be with your education and where you're at.
So, I started school, studied behavioral sciences, went back, studied. I fell in love with government and politics, not politics like Washington politics, but the political arena. Wars between nations and conflict resolution, all those different things. So that was what I studied for my second degree. Then I, both my degrees are from Purdue, so boiler up.
Go Boilers.
My master's is from St. Mary's. I have a Master of International Relations in National Security Policy. Super useful in Spokane, Washington. I also have a certificate.
Oh, by the way, just in case you haven't caught on, that's Taylor being extremely sarcastic.
Something that I'm really, really good at, and you'll get to know that a lot. I also have a certificate in Homeland Security, where I studied a lot of biological weapons and terrorism. It was a program that began shortly after 9/11, and I was the only female enrolled and the first one to complete the program, so yay me.
Yay, Taylor.
Yeah. Yay. I've got a press release somewhere with all the degrees and everything, just kind of collecting dust.
I want to see it. I didn't know there was a press release.
Of course there was.
Did you pay for it?
No. They contacted me.
Right on. Giddy up, girl.
That's right. So that's that. Masters, like new, never used, with honors, for sale, highest bidder. Call me.
Okay. That's a running joke in our household.
And, kind of is.
And so I think it's a good segue, because someone who's obviously extremely smart.
Super educated, but not using it.
Yeah, super educated. You've got, you know, what most people would think like an employer would die for with all that education. It would just be trying to scrape you up at the first possible opportunity, whereas me, the only real diploma I have hanging on the wall is a high school diploma. I have 3 years of college that I didn't complete. But as our society views success, right? I think they would view me as more successful, right? Because I'm retired. I've spent almost 22 years.
You got a lot of shit hanging on the wall.
I do have a lot of shit hanging on the wall. It's, we call it my I love me wall. And you know, that, that gave me, you know, that career in the military, which required zero education. I joined the military literally 2 weeks out of high school, and you know, spent decades doing that. That afforded me the opportunity to be hired on to my second career, which I left after just after 5 years. I was a police officer in Northwest Indiana, where both Taylor and I grew up. And I left that job after applying for and being accepted to my current job as a government civilian. So I work out here in Spokane, Washington. You know, moderately successful, I would guess, if someone else were viewing it. But people typically look horribly on the trades. You know, they don't look at it as being as successful. So how is success judged? You know, how is it measured and how is it viewed by other people, I guess, is really the conversation to be had.
Well, and so by asking that question, I have actually been asked by customers, so what does your husband think that you're only a bartender?
Really?
And I'm like, well, number one, he has no problem with it at all. And number two, I probably make twice the money that you do in half the time, motherfucker.
Whoa. Oh, shit. Taylor's getting real. But you know what? And so there's a lot to be said about, you know, in what you talked about earlier, waking up and not having any animosity towards...
Not hating your life.
Going to work. And I think there's plenty of people who would be considered, you know, air quotes inserted, successful, that just... you know, droll through life.
Oh, absolutely. I worked a management job that was a great job for a great company, also in this industry. The money was ridiculous. The perks were ridiculous. But I would get to work and I'd be like,
hate your life.
I did. I would look at the clock and be like, oh, 9 more hours.
Are we talking about your valley job that I don't want to mention?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Well, I just want some context because I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, so, and I will...
Because there's been other management jobs that were great. I was working like 60 hours a week managing a nightclub, and right. I had no issues. It was awesome.
Well, and I wasn't there
right.
for that. And, you know, we'll loop back to that. We were married, but separated geographically.
Because of you accepting this position, and I stayed behind to sell the house... So that put us apart for a year. I came out here to visit. It wasn't like we were separated.
Right. Well, yeah, that's why I kind of tried to caveat that with a geographically, not separated for
marital reasons.
Yeah, marital reasons.
Just, it was, you got this job and you had to come out here. So we packed up half the house. You took a dog, went with you. I stayed to sell the house, followed here later with two more dogs. And here we are.
That's a fact. Here we are. And so when we look at that, I don't know, maybe that's an important conversation to have about what success looks like and how it's viewed by...
Well, and how do you define success? Because you were raised in an upper middle class family.
That's true.
I was raised in a semi-middle class family. And... my dad worked a trade job where he came home greasy every day. And, you know, he worked the shift work, whatever, you know, 7 to 3, 3 to 7, or 7 to 3, 3 to 11. And I don't think they had a midnight shift there. But he was successful.
Right.
And satisfied and provided for his family. And
extremely skilled in his craft.
Very skilled. But his education spanned to the 9th grade. He dropped out of high school in the 9th grade because his parents were older. He was the youngest. He was unplanned. So there were, I think there was like 18 years between him and his next sibling. And it was basically one of those throw your hands up. What are you going to do? Let him run wild. So he dropped out of school, ran around, did whatever, got a job, ended up getting drafted, met my mom.
Your dad was a Vietnam guy.
He went to Korea instead of Vietnam, but it was Vietnam era, so he just got lucky.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he was in Korea. I told you that.
Apparently, I'm a shitty husband, and I don't listen very well.
He was, I think he was at Camp Stanley.
Shut the fuck up. Okay, this I would have absolutely remembered, and I know we have never talked about this, because I was at Camp Stanley.
I know. Because I said, wouldn't it have been cool? But I don't know a whole lot more. Somewhere is all his letters to and from my mom. He saved all his letters. She made little calendars and marked off X's with pencils every day that he was gone. I actually have a painting that he had done of him as a soldier with her in the background, almost like, you know, dreaming of her or whatever. It's in the bedroom.
Well, I'm going to have to check that out because... This is so weird. So this is our first podcast. Why is it that we have been together for certainly over a decade without giving away our whole shtick? But
well, probably because I don't talk about my dad a lot because he passed away right before we met.
Yeah,
and I just don't like to talk about it.
And so I guess kind of looping back to this whole thing of success. You know, your father was extremely skilled, successful by, I would think, any measure, provided for a family, a wife and two children. And, you know, my father was a stark contrast to that. We're almost, you know, between our fathers and their children, you and I, and our parents, our fathers, were reciprocals almost, because my father was extremely educated, almost to your, well, not, he didn't have two bachelors. He had a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. Physical fitness was his bachelor's, and he had a master's in, I want to say education, because I know he was a teacher for a while. So was my mother. And your father, you're telling me, dropped out in the ninth grade. And so you go one generation down. And
I'm the first college graduate out of my entire family.
Yeah. So my sister is the only, and I don't know what she graduated with.
She had an associate's.
Okay. Well, we're not going to call her a graduate simply because I don't like her. That's an issue we may delve into in a future podcast. Certainly not this one. And so trades, I think that's important. What's the difference, and how is it looked on? Obviously, like you said, you're in a trades craft, you know, and you're in a service industry, and someone was stupid enough to look at you and say, what does your husband think about you doing this menial labor,
being work? Only a bartender. We get it all the time. So what's your real job? What do you do for your real job? I mean, I know you work here, but what's your real job? Bitch, this is my real job. I make real money just like you.
And matter of fact, you're giving it to me as you're being a complete asshole.
Exactly. So thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. So with the trades are, and kind of have always been, looked down upon. Not always. I would say maybe in recent decades, because you're always told in school, you're going to go to college, you're going to do this, you're going to get your education, you're going to get married, you're going to have a family, and you're going to retire with 401ks and all this other stuff. But if you go the route of the trades, then you're kind of looked at like, oh, well, you weren't good enough.
Well, I'm telling you right now, I've had many friends in the trades. Matter of fact, my brother is in a trade. He got into it late in life. So he's, 40, so he's 51. He's going to retire next year.
Yeah.
And because he is a union tradesman, he retires with an immediate pension and health benefits for the rest of his life. So, you know, I certainly couldn't do that in my current job. you know, I can't draw a pension until I'm 62 and keep those benefits that, you know, unless I was, you know, obviously I'm retired military, so I get to carry those. But if I would have joined government service as a young man, I would have to work until 62. I could certainly retire when I'm, you know, 50, when most people have another 12 years to go to draw that pension
right.
and keep those benefits. So a lot, especially the unions, the union tradesmen.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. A lot of the trades have pretty amazing retirements, benefits, and all that. Now, when you're looking at the industry that I'm in, it's the complete and polar opposite. We have nothing. We don't get insurance. We don't get retirement. Fortunately, where I'm at, we recently have gotten a 401k. But the now, majority, unless you're
that,
working...
Is that due to the owner of the establishment? Or is that due to like a conglomerate of...
It was ownership. It was something that they did for the staff. And it's a very small staff. It's not one of these, you know, corporate chains where you've got, you know, 75 people working for you. This is a small little thing that was started, you know, 20 years ago. But
21.
Technically, almost in a couple weeks. In this industry, though, you have to plan for things. So before we were married, I remember we were dating. So we're in my house. And I was standing on the counter for something and the ceiling fan was on and you were telling me to be careful not to get hit by the fan. And I said, well, if I do, I can't go to the hospital because I don't have insurance because this job doesn't usually have insurance. So you have to pay cash for everything or you just don't go to the doctor. You don't go to the ER. You don't do anything. You deal with it. And then you plan for things. You plan for your future if you're smart. Mm-hmm. There's people I worked with a dude that he had one of those big water jugs that he filled with quarters and it was almost enough for his down payment on a house when all was said and done.
Okay. You can't, you have to talk into that big black.
Yeah, thing. I know. I also was having like a sinus thing.
Okay. I don't know why that happened because
why don't you just put it on do not disturb?
Well, I got my boss.
Oh.
Okay, cool.
Now they're saying don't come in at all?
No, they're saying your ass is going to show up to work tomorrow.
Oh, better you than me.
Well, you know what? I did get a snow day today, so I'm not going
to
complain.
Can't complain. Got to chill out and watch TV a little bit.
Yeah, I did. And plow the drive.
And get a new blade.
How do you destroy a stainless steel, solid steel snow plow? Well... neglect is how that happens. And so I needed a new plow today.
You give it the Donatelli effect.
So anyway, I think that's pretty important that we delve into that. So here, I pulled this up because we were talking about this earlier. So here is an announcement on USA Jobs. And for those of you who don't know what that means, USA Jobs is kind of your portal entry point into government service. And since that's what I do, I am kind of familiar with this.
So it's like Monster for government jobs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's if you want a government job, you're going to go to USA Jobs. You're not going to get hired. And so here is a job. The department is the Department of Energy.
Doesn't matter who it's for.
Well, it's Bonneville Power Administration, and the job is lineman. That's a guy who makes sure that you get power when you need power, right? And so when you think about importance in our society, I mean, how much more important is power? Having power run to all the things that
in this day and age is pretty fucking important.
Exactly, right? So I mean, we certainly wouldn't be doing this if we didn't have a reliable power grid.
No, you wouldn't watch TV. You wouldn't work from home. You wouldn't telecommute. You wouldn't do pretty much anything because everything is electronic now.
Right. But this guy, you know, that gets hired for this job is a tradesman and would he get the exact same treatment that you did?
Probably.
You know, and
if he walked in after a day of work
dirty,
without having showered and changed clothes dirty, people would look at him and be like, I don't want to sit next to you. You can't sit with us.
Yeah, you're not part of the cool kids club, yeah, because you're not,
dirty. You must work for a living. Go sit somewhere else.
But go ahead and read that hourly salary.
His or her hourly salary is $46.58 an hour.
An hour.
Regular time, not overtime, not time and a half, not double time for holidays.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's the minimum wage in Washington now?
12 something an hour.
12 something an hour.
Which is still ridiculous, if you ask me.
Yeah, for someone working at Subway.
Well, even so, in my industry, in the state of Washington, we're very fortunate to make minimum wage. It's a state law. I have never had that before. In the service industry, you normally make what is called server wage. So when I started out, I want to say it was like $1.99 an hour plus tips, but then it went up to $2.01. And then for the longest time, it stuck at $2.13 an hour. So generally, once you get out of the serving and you transition into bartending, if that's your thing, bartenders usually make a little bit more an hour. So we were making like $3.50 an hour. I think one place I made like $5.25 an hour, which is a big deal in the service industry. But generally, it's $2.13 an hour. And there are still a lot of states, Idaho being one of them, right next door, right across the border, that they make server wage. And a lot of times, depending on how many hours you work, you may have a negative check. You may have a check that's like a dollar.
How do you have a negative check?
If you charge things against your check. Let's say you charge a meal against your check. It could happen. So we always looked at our paychecks when we were $2.13 an hour and $2.01 an hour. It was cigarette money, gas money. You didn't look at your paycheck as a paycheck. It was just, oh, here's my gas money for the week. And you never even thought about it. There was people that probably never even cashed them because we had cash in our pocket every day.
Okay. So how does someone with obviously your education and background get to where you're on an hourly service industry gig, and me, someone without any education, get to where I am? And I think I make a pretty good fucking salary every year.
Well, and that's what I was going to say about me is I would say I'm pretty lucky. Because I do. I think pretty well, too.
Well, in all honesty, you do better than I do. But the bonus plan is mine is guaranteed, right?
Right.
So.
Well, and mine kind of is, too. Because people are always going to drink. You drink when you're happy. You drink when you're sad. You drink when you're depressed. You drink when you celebrate. People are always going to drink.
So you're saying I chose the wrong line of work?
No, you just chose the right girl.
That's true. Right on. Yeah.
Who chose the right industry? And it's amazing. And so all those things being said, yeah, people are always coming in. Everyone's going to drink and they need to take the edge off after work. What do? When you come home from work, when you walk in the door, say hi to your wife or your husband.
Beat your kids and yell at your dogs.
Kick the dog and you fix a cocktail to take the edge off the day. I walk in the door after a long shift at work. First thing I do. Hi to the husband. Hi to the dogs. I make a cocktail.
By the way, I have never beat my children or kicked my dogs. That was a joke. Please don't flame on me.
No, it's called having a sense of humor, but they need to get to know us.
That's true.
They don't know our quirks and our senses of humor.
People are probably
dry as they may be.
People are probably social justicing against me right now.
You'll get used to it.
No.
I get it a lot.
No. No. So, I think that's a pretty good segue, though, because you were going to
further my education even more.
Yeah. You were going to add another master's degree or a PhD to your portfolio.
Well, I was looking at doing a PhD. And after speaking with a couple of gentlemen who are PhDs, so I was wanting to go into counseling for PTSD vets and their families. Because
thank you.
it's something that we don't have enough help for. And I think that's a topic for another podcast about the need for that and why it is. So,
well, you know, and that issue kind of hits close to home. And maybe if we do that podcast, we can discuss that a little further.
But exactly. But I've got a little bit of experience in dealing with
crazy ass veterans,
a PTSD vet at home. So I was like, well, this is what I'm dealing with. How many thousands of other military spouses are dealing with this? So that's, I started looking into wanting to do that counseling. So I figured the next step would be a PhD. So I started looking at some programs and weighing out options. And, you know, there's this,
and by the way,
here.
She said I was going to have to call her Dr. Donatelli, which I wasn't happy about, but we'll,
that's okay.
We'll bypass that.
It didn't happen anyway, so it's okay. So I had gone and met with a couple of PhDs who took the time out of their schedules to answer questions for me and just kind of, you know, just shoot the shit. And I asked them if, knowing what they know now, would they have done it again? And they both said no. Because for the amount of work and money they put into the degrees, they could be doing the same thing with just a master's. And then there was the whole issue of the matching program, much like a medical school. When you do your internships, you list who your top choices are. The schools pick who their top choices are. If you match, super awesome. Everybody wins. If you don't match, well, nice try. Thanks for playing.
Sucks to be you kind of thing.
Exactly. And in the state of Washington, I would literally be putting all of my eggs in one basket. So if I didn't match with that one basket, then I would be screwed. So I started looking at master's programs, and I...
Why? So I had many of these questions when you... When you began this...
It was too risky.
...kind of selection process. So what's the difference? So I think maybe that's important to kind of hash out for the people who might be listening to this wondering what the hell you're talking about. Why would someone want to pursue a PhD and then decide on a master's?
For me, the main thing was not just the financial investment. It was the risk of the loss of the financial investment if I didn't match with the one and only intern provider in the state of Washington.
Gotcha.
And I also wasn't sure that I would be willing to uproot myself and go live somewhere else for a year or whatever, just for that.
As an intern.
As an intern, right. So I started looking at master's programs. I applied to a couple schools, and I ended up choosing one that was a really, really good program. It was a state school, and it was a master's of social work in military family counseling or something. So I get accepted and start the curriculum. And my second semester, I started having some real awakenings. I had a professor who basically upfront told us, if you are not committed to being a social justice warrior, this isn't the program for you. And I thought, what in the hell does that have to do with military family counseling, if I'm a social justice warrior? And then I had another teacher who had put up a distasteful, and I don't remember what the cartoon was, but she put up a distasteful cartoon or graphic that was very anti-police, which I took offense to, with Anthony having been a police officer for so many years. But this program, so there were a lot of military spouses enrolled in this program.
And so typically not your demographic for social justice
warriors. Correct. So we kind of found ourselves all in the same boat, where as much as we disagreed with it, if you eat shit with a knife and fork and swallow it politely, it goes down easier, I guess. You know, how bad do you want this degree? How bad do you want the school's name on your resume? That you just have to suck it up and go with the flow. And maybe my 20-year-old self might have done that, But I'll tell you what, my 47-year-old self sure as shit is not going to do that. So once these things started coming up, I was starting to get disillusioned with the program. And I actually started looking into the program a little deeper. So you have to...
Hold on 1 second. Is it just the program? Because my take on this is that it is higher education, period, in the United States of America. It's not just the program that you happen to be in.
Well, this was the first incident, if you want to call it that, in higher education where I had an issue such as that. I really didn't have any issues doing my other master's. I went to a Catholic university. There was nothing like that happening. There were certainly no off color. I was almost too familiar as far as the interaction goes between professor or instructor, you know, because not all of them were professors, but the relationship and interaction was almost too familiar.
What does that mean?
Where they're almost addressing you like they're your peer, like they're one of you.
Why is that bad?
I don't know that it would be bad, but in comparing it to my prior education, there was a certain level of respect that was assumed toward your professors and a certain...
Now, I may be completely off base here, but when I'm hearing you talk about this, it sounds like subservience is what you're describing, not anything else. You know, you're going to respect me because I'm in charge of this class.
No, not even a little bit. No, nothing like that. So in my previous education, all of it, it was more of a, I feel like it was a respect thing. These are your teachers. You're going to respect them. They know what they're doing. I'm here to learn. But in this particular program, it was almost like I don't want to say they bullied you. They tried to scare you.
You're talking about the MSW, the Masters of Social Work program.
Yeah. That they came out guns blazing and this is the way it's going to be.
So how did you handle that?
So when I looked further into the program, because once you're in the Master's of Social Work program, then you get to declare what your specialty is, your subfield. So military social work. So I start looking into that. What do I need?
So for someone like myself, who's never been in a master's program, why wouldn't you do that beforehand? And how long is that program typically?
Typically a master's program is 2 years and that's full time. And it's a lot of fucking work. So with this program, you get accepted to the program and you do your what is the master's courses. So these are the courses everybody takes. You take these in order. You take this course in this semester. It's only offered at this time. And then this one, and they kind of go together. They're all prereqs and cohorts. So after your first year is when you get to declare, you have to be ready to declare what your specialty is going to be. Right. And then you apply to that.
Okay.
So I start looking at the specialty, looking at what the curriculum is and whatnot. And I see there are no courses in military counseling.
Did they not have that before you ever enrolled, like a MAC?
No, you can't get into all that. They don't show you what that curriculum in those subfields is. It just tells you, oh, hey, you can get a master's in military social work. Or you could do this or this. So I start looking, poking around, can't find it. And so I'm already stewing from this social justice warrior bullshit and this off-color cop cartoon thing. I was not happy. And once I made the call into, I don't know if I would talk to the assistant dean or the dean or somebody in their offices, trying to find out what the hell, where are these courses that I'm assuming I'll be taking? And they said, oh, you'll learn that in your internship. I'm sorry, what?
So after you're done?
I'm going to learn that basically on the fly, is what you're telling me? So I'm going through all this. It, to me, is sounding more and more like, I hate to say it because it's a decent school, but it sounds like a freaking diploma mill. Here's all my money. I'm going to take all these classes and do all this work. Yay, super awesome. and I'm going to learn the real job that I'm supposed to be getting trained to do on the fly as an intern for 20 hours a week.
Well,
that's comforting.
That doesn't sound like a good plan at all.
And so once that's over and I get my shiny new degree and I put it in my little frame and put it on the wall, then you're going to release me to go deal with these.
To learn exactly what you wanted to learn to on the outset.
And you're going to basically release me, who doesn't know jack shit. So you're going to send me to go talk to these service members and their families who are having real problems. And I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm supposed to make it up as I go along. That's kind of a scary thought.
Right.
So I withdrew. Said this isn't the program for me.
And so you're doing now what you were doing when you started off doing it. And you're happy.
I'm very happy. I don't come home with a ton of stress. I freaking love my job. I love my job.
I'm glad that you love your job.
I'm very fortunate because there's, and you like your job.
Well,
But I don't know many people because people think I'm bullshitting them all the time. Actually, the significant other of one of my bosses always thinks I'm being patronizing and being full of shit when I talk about how much I love being there. And it's 100% true. I genuinely love my job. I love being there. I love what I do. I love all my people.
And me, I've put in 4 resumes in the past 2 weeks.
Exactly. I get job offers all the time. I get probably at least every 2 weeks I get an offer, whether it's verbal or it's written, scrawled onto a napkin, left under a cocktail with some money to pay for said cocktail that doesn't get touched. Or people that will come and say they want me to come and work for them. They're trying to steal me to go. And I always say, hey, I'm good. I'm not looking. I am not even considering retirement. I will do plastic surgery if I need to do plastic surgery to compete with the young girls. But I love what I'm doing. I have no intention of quitting. I will do this job until I can't do this job. If somebody came and offered me the job I went to school for, I'd probably say thanks, but no thanks. I'm good.
That's probably really, that's smart beyond your years, I think.
And also they couldn't afford me.
She says with a with a gilded head nod and an eyebrow raised above what is normally humanly possible.
So the way I've always, when I've talked to people about their jobs, when I've decided, like when I was an intern in college and when I was talking to the PhDs deciding, you know, is that the route for me? And when I stop and think about it and think about my current situation and my job, I always ask people, you know, do you love what you do? And most of the time they say, yeah, because it's a reflex and that's the answer you're supposed to give. And then I ask them, would you do it for free? No one has ever said yes. I would do my job for free.
I don't believe that.
I don't have to and I don't want to, but I love it. It's so much fun. It's like hosting a party.
So, you know, let me circle back to the whole social justice warrior thing. Because here in Washington, I think that is a serious topic of conversation, especially last year with the whole, you know, Evergreen State thing where there, you
a
know.
A day without, yeah.
Yeah, so typically prior to last year, and it might even be 2 years now, if I might be chronologically wrong, but
that's over on the other side of the state also.
That's true.
So for people that don't know the state of Washington, the west side over on Seattle, like west of the Cascades, is a very liberal way of life. And generally the east side of the state where we're at is more conservative. However, Spokane itself is not very conservative. Spokane itself is very liberal. So continue.
I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but
no, I'm just explaining
this,
it.
This
because the west side looks at the east side, like Seattle. Like, they look at us like
we're backwards ass hillbillies,
a bunch of big dumb rednecks.
And so Evergreen State is an extremely liberal college that, to my understanding, never went there, was never a student. So this is basically on news reporting alone. There was a day every class year that the African-American students, black students, whatever the politically correct term is, would leave for the day to see what it would be like without black students in your school.
And didn't they call it a day without black people? Something like that.
Something like that. And so a bunch of the white students got together and decided that we're all leaving and we're going to allow the black students to stay, and demanded through this whole social justice warrior thing that you alluded to, that everybody participate. And there was one professor who, in his own right, was an extremely liberal professor, said, "I'm not doing that. What you're asking for and what you're demanding is in itself, on its face, racially motivated, and I refuse to participate." They boycotted this guy. They shouted him down. I mean, there's numerous videos on YouTube about how racist this one guy is because he would not capitulate to what the whole social justice warrior movement was all about. And although I applaud the thought that went behind that, why would these black students have to leave campus to prove a point, to demand someone go along with your tactic and your ideology, is, to me, horrible. And they, with all the videos and all the public outrage, this guy basically ended up being run out of the university. And, you know, that to me is the extreme of social justice, you know, air quotes included. And I just think it's radicalism. Me personally.
And I can't speak about it because, honestly, don't know much about it. I remember a blip about it in the news, but to be honest, I got shit to do. I can't consume myself in something happening on the other side of the state. I know that sounds petty. Don't you be slurping that at me.
That's the end of my cocktail.
It is. Does that mean it's the end of the podcast?
That's typically how I tell Taylor that I need another cocktail.
And people that do that, what happens to them when they make that sound? They're the last person to get a drink from me.
Unless they are your beloved's betrothed.
Uh-huh. So anyway, I can't speak on this Evergreen State thing because I know it happened. I know the bottom line, but everything in the middle, I don't know. And I'm fine with that.
So what's the wrap up for this podcast?
I would say the wrap up is, to circle back to our trades versus education, I wouldn't even call it blue collar versus white collar. I would say that the trades are a very neglected option for
not only neglected,
young adults,
but maybe looked, like you said earlier, looked down upon.
I think they are, except when those jobs are getting ready to open up. When all those people, generally men working in the steel mill, all those guys were getting ready to retire, and people were lined up dropping applications to get into those steel mills because of not only the pay and the benefits and the security. So I think it depends on where.
Yeah, and you know, so a lot of those trades that you're talking about come with a lot of stability that the professions, you know, air quotes inserted, don't have. You know, you could be in a you could be a lawyer, you could be a doctor with no guarantees, right? If you're a tradesman, if you're you know, if you're a union guy working for the railroads here in Spokane,
I was just gonna say that.
You know, you've got guarantees. Why? Because you have an enormous union behind you, and there's someone to protect you. You know, you're not going to be singled out because of who you are. You must be singled out for your actions or your lack of actions in your job performance to be terminated. Once you're in there, you're pretty secure. And
well, yeah, and a lot of these places, so these workers, these trade workers, overtime's always there. They're getting so much overtime that they're turning it down because they're just freaking tired. They're making great livings. But then when you look at these educated people, I knew two people. One was a doctor. I think it was a chiropractor.
Well,
it was like a friend of a friend of a friend.
Isn't really a doctor.
And the other was a professor at one of the colleges I went to. And you know what they both did after their day job was done? They delivered fucking pizzas at night to make ends meet.
That must have been a very young doctor right out of college.
Maybe going through a divorce and had a couple kids. So,
well,
but look at the professor, quotes professor. So they don't give out tenure like they used to. So you're having to take a job teaching classes here and then at this little satellite campus here in order to make ends meet. They don't make a ton of money and deliver pizzas at night. So who's looking down on who? Is it the guy coming home from the steel mill who's got to wash his hands every day that he gets home from work? But, you know, they drive him and his wife drive a Mercedes. They got a really nice house and they've got this, this, and this. But then here you got, you know, Professor Joe Schmo.
Well, you know what, Taylor, you know this probably better than anybody, because when I was a police officer working that midnight shift, there was a mantra that I had that if you're on the road at midnight, you're either the paper guy or you're out for no good. With the rare occasion that I would bump into the citizen coming home from the steel mill. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you from personal experience that when I would bump into that guy driving home at midnight, 12:30, that, you know, with the exception of something extreme, you know, let's say the guy had a warrant, I'm going to excuse myself for having disturbed him for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, because my aunt was a steel mill worker for a number of years, decades, as a matter of fact. So I get that, how hard they work when they work. And so if I happen to bump into that person at 12:30 at night, they would get my apologies for disturbing them for the few minutes that I had to disturb them for whatever reason it was that I pulled them over to begin with. And they would be on their way. So, you know, for me, there's a whole lot of respect for people who go out there and, like you had mentioned, you know, come home with their hands dirty just to provide for their families. And, you know, we certainly didn't plan it this way, but
that's how our country was built. You know, after we came through the Depression, the trades were where it was at. That's what built this nation.
That's true.
And I think there's a lot to be said for taking a job in the trades, and college isn't for everybody.
No, and you know
can
what?
You can say you can attest to that yourself.
There's so many college graduates right now, you know, leaving 4 years of college, tens of thousands of dollars in debt with their
and they're never going to get out
their,
of debt
with their liberal arts degrees that are going back home living with their parents, wondering why there's no jobs for them.
Go talk to a bartender and ask them, so what's your degree in? Because pretty much all of them have degrees.
All right. So if we have to put an exclamation point on this, let's say this. Let's not thumb our nose at our neighbors, because we don't know the experiences that they have gone through. We don't know the life experience that that neighbor has.
Or what they're dealing with.
Or what they're dealing with, you know.
They may be taking care of a sick parent, an ailing parent.
Like you did. And we didn't get into that, but that's what kind of derailed your profession, air quotes inserted.
Absolutely.
When your father passed. But I think it's a good place to kind of wrap this up and thank the people who have hung in this long with us. So on behalf of myself and Taylor, we want to thank you for hanging in with us and listening to us. We hope that you'll join us for future podcasts.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
All right. Peace.